Hi, welcome to Delicious Dish. No, wait. This is Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and I'm so pleased to have in the studio with me today, John Lindemann.
Hi.
Hi, John. It's so good to see you.
It's great to see you, Johnny.
We also have James Jones.
I hope that tastes good, John.
Oh, dude, it's so good.
Can't you see it? We're all in the same room, apparently.
Of course we are. And you also heard Greg Lay. He's here as well.
Hello, so, everyone. It's episode 115, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Greg, why don't you just take over?
No, I did. Well, I just had to point it out. It's not a power play. It's just
no, no, no. I'm not accusing you. Just, I wish you could take over because I feel like ass today.
I'm just going to go to sleep over here. Y'all can keep going.
No, so John is eating.
Yeah.
James is drunk.
Not drunk, buzzed.
I feel like I have an anvil on each shoulder. I'm so tired.
A boulder on your shoulders, if you will.
Yes,
if you won't.
And Greg is his usual chipper self, despite being up at 3 in the morning, yeah. Which makes me feel like a wuss for being so tired. It's 7 o'clock
I'm just a happy camper, rocking and a rolling.
I know. No, wow. I'm happy. I'm just tired. So we don't really have a plan for this show. I figured, you know, every now and then
go ahead and stop listening now.
Yeah, I just like to see to the pants, you know, as opposed to the leg of the pants or the buckle, I guess. But anyway, so we're just gonna talk about whatever, you know. I mean, we'll make it kind of new businessy, and we'll tell you what came out on the virtual console this week. But
what Johnny's saying is, just sit back and enjoy the ride.
That's what I'm gonna do, and you know, if you don't do that at home, then you're not gonna have much fun. Because,
that's right.
Accept this in the spirit with which it was given. I guess I should say. So, yeah, I mean, who wants to go first with new business? And, you know, don't even feel obligated to talk about games. Talk about what's going on in your life right now. What do you think is interesting in the world? What do you want to chat about? Let's just chat.
Football.
Let's do car talk. Well, I mean, my muffler
football.
Was not in.
You want to talk about football, don't you, James? That was a bloody good showing on Thursday night.
Man, those Virginia teams are really killing this season. Yeah, the West and the East and the Tech and the blah, 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 and they're all being killed by, you know, I think East Carolina is the South Florida of this season.
God,
right?
Damn.
Agreed.
Yeah. I'm glad we're not playing them.
The first team to run into that, too. Oh.
I did watch the Buffs, Colorado, play Eastern Washington last week, and actually made the mistake of going to the game, which I try not to do, because coming from a real football school, going to the games here in Colorado is just embarrassing, really, to watch the team. And I'm not denigrating the players themselves. I actually had a friend last year who kicked the winning field goal against Oklahoma. He was all over ESPN and everything. He was a friend of mine, but the coaching is atrocious. And let me give you guys an example. Okay, we're down 2 touchdowns right before the half, and we catch a lucky fumble, okay, and we're on the 20, we start like on the 30-yard line. We've got 2 minutes to drive in 30 yards for a touchdown and get back up within 1 score before halftime, okay? So everybody's like, okay, we're going to do this. It'll be okay. We'll have plenty of time to come back in the second half. So they move down. They get a first down. They're on the 16-yard line with 1.25 left in the half, and they spike the ball on first down. We had 2 timeouts left, and they spiked the ball on first down.
That's retarded.
I think this is a good time to mention that, if I'm not mistaken, because I don't know a terrible amount about college football, if I'm not mistaken, the coach of the Colorado Buffaloes is in fact the old coordinator of the offense for the Bills. So, yeah, enjoy him.
I don't know. His name is Dan Hawkins, and his son is the quarterback.
Yes.
Oh, right. No,
which
no,
presents
no.
its own... I don't want to blame it on that. I think the coach is just terrible. I mean, yeah. I think the son is an okay quarterback. He's doing the best he can.
Dan Hawkins is best known for his rant about this is football.
Really?
his you can't get summer vacation rant or something along those lines. It was nice.
Is that as good as the Gundy rant about I'm a man, I'm 40 and all that? That's
my favorite college football rant.
This was the rant before that that took the cake, and then this one, it was just, okay.
What about T.O.'s rant where he's like, man, that's my team, man.
Oh, that was brilliant. Oh, my God.
And if you're going to talk about what they would have done in Mexico, man,
it's not fair. Oh, what a ballad. Honestly,
so
he is a legend.
About those Patriots, I don't watch NFL, but I heard some crazy stuff. Well, first I heard Favre got 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, one
and
of which was on
Brady's
like
out for
one
the
of
season.
Which was on such a classic Favre heave. Although it was
forgivable, that was epic
because it was on fourth down and the kicker couldn't kick because he was injured. So it's like a punt if he's intercepted.
And he couldn't even.
It was
see
actually
the guy
excusable.
He was throwing it to. He literally just heaved it into the air and just hoped.
Yeah, but to be fair,
wow.
Brett, see that's to me was a case of the broken clock being right twice a day because it was actually appropriate then. Whereas when it's like, oh, I don't know, in a divisional playoff game against Philadelphia in overtime. Time, that's when it's not appropriate to make that
exactly.
You know?
Oh God.
He just beamed it into the air and did like just like okay. And it just happened to hit the guy
and he fell into the end zone with it.
I'm like, you've gotta be shitting me.
For the sake of our listeners, why don't we alternate between like gaming topics and non gaming topics?
No.
So I could talk for a sec about a game that I bought a few days ago for $5 on Steam called XCOM UFO Defense.
I'm glad I'm not the only one
who's played it. So, John, how would you describe it, or what's your
experience?
Well,
I mean, I really haven't. I had that game for, like, a cup of coffee on, like, way, way back in the day. And, I mean, everything I do was way, way back in the day, but beside the point. But, yeah, I mean, if I remember, I just remember it being really cool because you fight stuff underwater, and it's kind of...
Oh, that's Terror from the Deep. That's
is
one
it?
Of the
okay.
sequels.
Okay.
Dude, you're blowing it. You're blowing it.
I'm sure it's simple. I'm sure it's similar to the
Put
original.
Food back in the mouth, dude.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not an XCOM expert, but I know that I had friends back in the day that used to love XCOM.
UFO Defense is basically it's just a defense game that you normally see now in flash games. It came out in 1993. The whole premise was you are defending, as one would suspect, a UFO from interlopers who would like to seize it.
Oh, okay.
James, are you reading from Wikipedia now?
No, I'm actually just basing this on what I know of the game, having never played it.
Oh, because you sounded like you were reading from Wikipedia.
Yep.
That's impressive. Sorry, John. Yeah, there's a very particular. Maybe that's why I believed you last week when you said N64 only had 100 games.
It only had 100
you just
games.
Have that authorial tone
yeah,
in
very,
your voice.
Very persuasive. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, IDN Chronicles knocks off at least 200 games just in the total count because it's so bad.
So we've already had numerous listeners email us and comment on the forums that there were actually something like 377 or 387 games for the N64. Although James did calculate for us after some people emailed us that 70 of them never came to America. So the actual number of ones that came out in North America was 300.
Exactly.
But it's three times what you said last week,
and it's partly my fault for going along with you. Being wrong is not a level of wrong. You're just wrong, and therefore they're also all wrong. And therefore you all are wrong too, listeners. You're wrong.
Oh, okay. That,
I expect you to write a letter with a correction yourself saying that you're wrong.
So, anyway, I bought XCOM
on Steam, and there were 4 N64 exclusives to Europe. If you can find those games, I bet they're all terrible.
I bet at least one is
Greg
a soccer
has all
game.
Of them.
I was an import game. I don't have.
You didn't
a,
even have
a I don't own a single N64. European N64 game.
Oh. You forgot that Greg is not really European. He just talks that way.
Yes. It's all part.
So,
it's all part.
So anyway, I bought XCOM on Steam, and if you've did any of you guys play Rebel Star Command
no.
on GBA a
no,
couple
I did
years
not.
Ago?
No.
I remember it
so
got a glowing review on our website. I don't remember who reviewed it, but it got very high scores, and I remember at the time people comparing it to XCOM. But anyway, if you've played that, you probably have a good idea of what XCOM's like. It's also, I would say, at least parts of it are very similar to things like Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics Ogre, Disgaea, things like that. So the idea is the game is kind of split into two parts. In one part, you see this globe of the Earth, and you're spinning it around. UFOs come, you have a base, and you're managing your base and like how many, what kind of facilities you have. You have scientists who can do research. That's my favorite part, because you, as you play through the game, you open up all these research topics that you can assign scientists to work on. And you put them on there, and you wait a couple days, and they come back with this report, and they say, now we can build laser rifles. And then you tell your engineers, build me some fucking laser rifles. I want to shoot aliens. And so they build them. So the cool thing is, like, as you fight the aliens and you shoot down UFOs and go kill off the survivors from the crash sites, you gather the alien corpses and the alien technology, and you bring them back to your base, and then you can research them. And you end up, over time, you, like, accumulate knowledge about the UFOs, and you can basically build your own UFOs and build your own alien weapons and use them against the guys and build armor and stuff. It's pretty awesome. And the actual strategy part, once you shoot down a UFO and you go, you know, you send your team of soldiers out there to investigate it, then it's like Final Fantasy Tactics, basically, although it came before that. So, you know, you're moving everybody around on this isometric grid, and once you spot an alien, you can shoot at it, you have a certain percentage accuracy of hitting it or not. So it's sort of random, luck-based to some extent. But the strategy part is really hard. Even on beginner difficulty level, the game is brutal. But it's a PC game, you know, you can save any time. There's a lot of stuff on GameFAQs about it, and I find the idea of the game so compelling that I actually want to go learn the proper way to play it so I can get farther before I run out of money or whatever. So it's not a game for the weak of heart, but if you like strategy games and you've never checked it out before, I would say, I mean, it's a fantastic deal for $5, and it's one of those legendary games that you hear people talk about all the time, and it's still really fun to this day. It had been 10 years probably since I played it, and I still am enjoying it a lot.
It came out about 92, right? Around there? 91, 92?
Yeah, it's pretty old.
Did you buy the id Super Pack that was on sale this weekend?
No, you know, I was talking to Wendy about that, and it sounds like a. I mean, that's been up for a while, but I think it's like
it was this past weekend.
It was like
$35 for like practically every single id game out there, aside from like Doom 3 and kind of that time period.
I thought it even had Doom 3, did it not? Because that game, Doom 3 is like almost 5 years old.
Yeah.
It seems like they'd throw that
in there. I think it might have had Doom 3.
I don't know.
I'm not too sure. But I mean, seriously, you get a ton.
You know, I think that was the last game id made. It was like four years ago. Remember, do you remember, here's a weird trivia point, Vicarious Visions, the saviors of Wii and DS, ported Doom 3 to the original Xbox.
That is weird.
Isn't that weird?
Hmm.
Yeah. That's the only Xbox game they made, as far as I know. Anyway, I never played Doom 3, but honestly, yeah, Wendy told me about it. He's like, you should buy that, because I told him I bought XCOM. He's like, you should buy the id Super Pack, and I'm like, dude, you know, I've played a lot of id games. I can't say that I really like any of them. The only one that I ever enjoyed for any length of time was Quake 3, and that's right after I got the internet back in, like, 98, and I played it with Evan for a while. I probably only played, in fact, I know I didn't own the game, so I probably only played the free demo. And I would get on there and play with Evan for a while. You know, we had like two maps.
Yeah,
it was fun, but I wouldn't really want to play it now, and I wouldn't want to pay for it. So for me, $35 out of all those games, the only ones I might even seriously play would be like Commander Keen.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I mean, I thought for $35, the amount of games you get was a real deal, and I also really like the really old Castle Wolfenstein 3D games. I loved those when they came out.
Yeah, to me, those are pure novelty now. Like, I could not play Doom 1 or Wolfenstein 3D for more than 5 minutes, either one. They're just, to me, they haven't.
No, they really haven't. They're so crude, but I still enjoy playing through them. But what you do really realize how much they reuse their graphics engines, because they just hoard those things out. I mean, like all the Hexen games. Yeah. I think there's...
Hexen is really shitty. I mean, I remember playing Hexen 64, which came out. It was one of those like early post-launch N64 games, and I rented it just because there was nothing else to rent. And I was like, this looks like Doom. shit, for that matter, Doom 64, although some would say it's maybe the best version of Doom, but it's still fucking Doom. It's just not that good, in my opinion. It's like, those things were such technical gimmicks. They were such, you know, like, technological novelties at the time they came out that they didn't really have to pour so much effort into the game design or the level design or the AI. And if you go back now, that stuff just doesn't hold up at all. Now that the flash is gone and they're no longer graphically impressive, there's just nothing to them.
Well, I mean, they're kind of a one-trick pony that's been, you know, one-upped about 100 times over, right? It's not even like something like Mario 64 where you can still play that game to this day. And because even though the 3D has been surpassed, the gameplay is so solid that you can still enjoy it. With Doom, it's just like...
Yeah, wow. And that's the reason that the It Super Pack doesn't appeal to me very much. Because even though it's a really good deal, I don't really want to play those games, you know? So, XCOM is actually a game that I would play. Even though it kicks my ass, it makes me want to keep trying and figure it out. And I think it's also one of those games that the hardest part is right at the beginning. Because there's so much to do, there's no tutorial at all. And it's so hard to get off the ground. But once you do, once you develop a couple of key technologies that let your soldiers live a lot longer and do better damage and stuff, it lets you get much farther in the game, I think. That's what I'm hoping. Because I've got a save game right now where I've got the personal armor and the laser rifles for all my soldiers. And it looks like early signs are that combination of stuff will really, really help me play the game better, and hopefully that's going to let me keep playing for a lot longer without totally losing. So, anyway, yeah, XCOM is great. $5. I mean, it's
now they
awesome.
Had the XCOM.
So, and it runs great on Vista too, which was a big concern I think of people. But
they had the whole XCOM pack on sale, right? Didn't they? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I considered buying the pack because the whole pack is only $15. You get like six games, five or six games, but. The word on GAF, I asked around, and it seems like the consensus was that the first was by far the best. And then Terror from the Deep, the one you were talking about that's underwater, is like the second best. So, the other ones I don't really care for. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, who's next?
Who I got Choniki.
Oh, snap! The man memes have hit America.
Yeah. I thought we might want to talk about that.
They
dropped man memes.
I saw that price tag, and I was like, no.
Yeah.
Hey,
is it $9? Was it a CD game?
Yeah, it was.
Is it an import CD game? Yeah. Okay, that's why it's not.
Are you kidding? Do you think a normal cartridge could hold the power of Joe Niki? You know?
What I want to talk about is the ESRB rating, because I am woefully disappointed.
Was it E10?
I was too busy firing man beams to check, but
it was 7
like
plus
mild
over
suggestive
here.
Theme.
It was 7
really?
Plus.
Yeah, it's yeah. It's E10 over here.
But I mean, the content descriptors too. It's just I don't understand. All right, I'm going to read the content descriptors because
okay,
I've mentioned
go ahead.
Oh,
now.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yep.
And the ESRB officially describes this game as having mild fantasy violence and mild suggestive themes.
Yeah. Probably said the same thing about Superstar Saga, or at least according to Johnny anyway.
What?
You mentioned on Radio Trivia there was some sort of rampant innuendo in Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga.
Yes, it is actually. I don't know if the ESRB caught
Mario
it.
Mario and Luigi
but...
Superstar Saga predated the content descriptors being.
We'll never know unless they re-release it. But I did my due diligence on this, and I looked at the press release, and the wording is very similar to what was read out.
It is.
There is no reference to the term man beam. So
I think it's proof that Nintendo listens to our podcast.
See, this is what I'm thinking about. No, so Europe release contains the phrase man beam, the US doesn't. Europe gets tingle, you don't. I'm thinking this means that we're probably going to get Captain Rainbow and you're not. That's where I see this going.
That hurts.
Yep.
Well, if you do, Greg, you know you have to cover it for us.
Yeah, well, it could be really quite an interesting game. It's by Skip, so
grossly underrated. I think Chibi Robo is brilliant.
I mean, come on, man. I picked up Choniki. You gotta you got to pony up.
Yeah, well, it was extra over it. You forget Wii points are, you know, more expensive here.
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah, it's true. But
it's just I could not justify £6.30 of Her Majesty's overvalued currency for Germany.
Hey, Greg, you can't take Wii points from one region to another, can you?
No, you can't, actually. Gifting and all that sort of thing is all region-locked. Yeah, it's kind of silly.
That's too bad. It would have been really convenient for when you were in the U.S. a couple weeks ago to just pick up a bunch of Wii points over here at the store, that would have been nice.
The
cards back with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have gotten them for
That's really weird discount. Because it's like you've got your Wii friends are, like, obviously could be worldwide, but a lot of the things you can do with them, even trading vouchers between Metroid Prime 3 games, is region locked.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, that's lame. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
No, yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, I think Chiron, Carmine, our news editor, was kind enough to send me some, and I sent him some. And actually what happened was we just lost them completely. We didn't even get them returned. They just disappeared. You know, they were sort of erased.
Into the void.
Down the memory hole.
So that was a waste of, that was a waste
yeah, really.
Of time.
Thank you, Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you even get vouchers in Corruption?
It's achievement-y stuff, like you'll get ones for beating bosses, you'll get ones for scanning things, you'll get ones for killing so many enemies.
That's actually a pretty cool system. Like,
yeah, and then there are some unlockable sort of things like art galleries or something that are dependent on trading vouchers, and that's what I wanted to do, and then I couldn't bloody do it because that happened.
Yeah. Sweet. I did like the stickers you could get for your ship.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yep.
Yeah. But that system was a cool idea. I mean, it's the only Wii game I can think of with achievements. But, you know, nobody's done it since then, so the whole... And unfortunately, it's kind of fallen through the cracks.
I suppose, yeah.
I don't know if the rewards for those vouchers were really worth it. But, I mean, you know, in a 360 game, you don't really get any reward at all. So...
Mm.
Right, you know, I think the spirit of it is cool. Like, if it gets you to scan things that you wouldn't scan otherwise, or, you know, I mean, the whole point of achievements, or the value in achievements, I think, is getting you to try things in the game that you probably wouldn't have otherwise. You know, like some of these sort of peripheral things. But whatever.
Yeah,
so Choaniki,
You know, it's
so
actually... Well, I was thinking about how the best way to actually describe it on the podcast, and all I can say is that it's long, hard.
Stop.
And
stop. Edit it out. Gone.
It's secretly an RPG.
Right? That's not a sandwich John has in his mouth right now.
You are actually trying to make me edit this out. You're trying to make me have to work on this.
James,
I've yet to see you edit anything out of the podcast
because I know,
should be, so I'm just assuming that you won't.
James, because I know you won't edit this out, I'm just considering activating my ejector seat and just getting it over with right now.
Get out now. Just go.
Well,
oh god.
All right. Well, Choaniki, it's a competent shooter. It's there's parts of it that are very difficult. The way that you actually use the man beam. I wasn't using the man beam at first. But the thing is, I think that there comes a point in everybody's life where they actually know how to use competently their man beam. And so I had that whole thing happen last night. I actually was able to use my man beam effectively, and it was a pivotal point in my playing of the game, so to speak. So,
Is there anything in the game design specifically that encourages you to become more proficient with the use of the man beam?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, there's actually a lot of enemies where you really can't kill them effectively. There's some enemies where if you don't kill them, the only way to kill them was with the man beam, and then if you don't do it, if you just try to do it with your normal shots, then they come back onto the screen. So it's really it's pretty much in your best interest to pretty much always just aim for the, you know, the middle of the screen and just keep hammering your man beam, so to speak.
Hammering it. Wow.
Does the
man beam come out of those holes in the tops of their heads that I saw in the
Those aren't holes, they're third eyes.
No, see, the thing is, you can use
look like holes in the tops of their heads.
Oh, that's the thing. You choose between two different characters.
Editen or Benton.
Yeah, Benton.
And how different are they really?
They aren't really different. I think The
one's
male
got a
character.
Red thong, one's got a blue thong.
Well, that's the thing.
The
I mean,
male character. Which one is that?
The male character is actually he's looks like Superman. He has like a cape and he flies through the air. Like he's not, you know, some kind of buffed out sort of homoerotic kind of thing. That's the thing. Like at least in the first parts, the first areas that I've been in, it's like it's not as homoerotic as you would think.
Not as homoerotic as you would think.
There are definitely homoerotic elements,
but not as homoerotic as you think.
I mean,
I've heard that the later games in the series are
I think since we did this the first time, it's time for somebody to read the press release. So since I've got it here, I guess I'll go ahead.
Right. It's almost the same.
Well, there is the key phrase. Well, that and just the phrase that I personally enjoy: the use the buttons to fire away and lay into the builder forces. Power up your characters with and options with protein from defeated enemies to have them quote bulk up unquote with a yell.
Yeah, you can. Your options are actually, you know, how in R-Type you have your two little, you know, little orbs that can float around you. Well,
oh, you mean Gradius. Gradius style, because R-Type style is the one that sort of comes on the front or the back.
Well, that's the thing, though. In R-Type, you have your two little orbs.
Yeah, because with R-Type, you've got the main one, and then you can have two on the top and the back. So, do you mean options like Gradius, where they can sort of swirl around you, or do you mean fixed position like R-Type?
They're fixed.
Right, so it's like R-Type.
You can send them out for an attack, but they're always fixed above and below you.
Right.
But those are two buffed out guys in Speedos. So,
correction, he did mean R-Type.
They're orbiting you?
Hells yes, dog. Got buffed out guys in Speedos orbiting me all the time. It's called bodyguards, son.
Yeah, and you can...
ain't nobody gonna mess with you with that around.
So when the protein flies through the air, either you can get it or you can have your two bodyguard guys get it.
John, can you please repeat that phrase? Because it merits repeating.
when the protein flies through the air, you could either have yourself get it or your bodyguards get it.
Yes.
Okay.
But the key is...
I'm not editing that out. That's going to get put like the entire rest of the podcast.
So, John, do you really think it's worth downloading? I mean, is it funny enough or is it fun enough?
It's not. It's not worth the money, honestly. But if you're curious to see what all the, you know, the hype was about, one of my favorite
the
parts
hype on this podcast.
But one of the funniest things in the game is the countdown screen after you die, the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, is like buffed out guys in Speedos in the most homoerotic poses you could ever find. Like they're sitting there like posing, like they're competing, you know what I mean? Like it's hilarious.
So do you find yourself compelled to die? Is that what you're telling us?
It's a difficult game. I mean, the thing is the controls are pretty floaty, so you really have to watch out. You can control your speed of your guy as he moves around the screen, and I think it's about a 6 or 7 point scale of speed, and then even on 3, you're flying around, so it's difficult.
I'm surprised that you say it's so competent in terms of gameplay, because it's considered like almost the father, I think, of this, or at least a prominent member of this genre in Japan called kasuge, which translates to shit games.
Yeah.
And it's like a popular, weird little niche of games in Japan that people buy knowing that they're not good, but they buy them for the sheer novelty value. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, Kohler just recently bought China Warrior for TurboGrafx-16 at PAX and made a big deal about it. And yeah, China Warrior is like considered maybe the worst game for TG16, but he still bought it knowing that it was bad because he thought it would be amusing. And that's kind of the whole idea of kasuge. And so I guess you could say the same thing in America. Like, if you don't really care how good of a game it is, you just want to laugh at it,
yeah,
or you're just curious as to how weird it really is, I guess it is worth buying.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
like, purely on those merits.
Yeah, I mean, if you're curious, if that's the right word to use in this case.
Womp.
Well, it's the right word.
I've got a question about this. Do you think this proves, is like a proof of concept, that a pumping iron, the video game, as expressed through a scrolling shooter, would be something that developers should look into getting on the ground?
I definitely...
Isn't that pretty much what Shoniki wants?
Yeah. But you haven't got the autobiographical element, though, with that, have you?
Yeah, I want to know about Edeten and Benton.
But you want to know about them being Arnie. That's the main thing you need to know.
Yeah, I don't know which one is which, but only one of them has the man beam, because one of them is obviously a woman, so she has a woman beam, I guess.
Obviously, oh, she's
what?
A woman.
Yeah.
Well, what's I'm what? Looking at a screenshot, and what the hell is this little blue thing following him around? It's like got this really confused look on its face.
That may be there's two different types of options. There's one that I haven't run into yet. There's the two bodybuilder guys, and then there's also apparently like some little angel. That I haven't seen yet, who is apparently rarer than the bodybuilder guys. So
I
don't.
The amazing thing about this, though, is the image is probably only about 3 inches wide.
Uh huh.
But in it, I can see the muscle definition on one of the bodybuilder guys, and I like the fact that it appears they put muscle definition into his Speedo.
Yeah.
Thank you for
I've
that.
I've heard that the game has muscles on things that shouldn't have muscles.
That's entirely possible.
That's what they said about me, man.
we're always getting letters from people asking, like, what's a good game for girls, or what's a game to play with
Not
your
this.
Girlfriend, or whatever. I mean, Choaniki, it's a game full of buff, muscular guys. I mean, what could be better for the self-respecting young female gamer?
Game anything,
units,
any game
that.
Ever made.
Yeah.
It's like football.
I think the term self-respecting pretty much overrode that recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing...
It was intentional.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I'll say about it is that it's like football and that it's a game of inches.
Oh my God.
All right, we're done. We're done.
No.
We are fucking done.
Thank you. Tip your waitress.
So I started watching Battlestar Galactica past week.
Well, actually,
on DVD.
One more thing
it's,
I will say.
Surprisingly
this,
good.
One, episode 103, going to be better than this one. I can feel it.
The one last thing I will say about it is
done.
Well, the one thing that actually creeps me out about it is that when you do get your option guys and you power
you
them
mean
up.
This, you mean this whole conversation hasn't creeped you out enough?
I'm living in it, man. I guess I'm
you mean,
just immune. I guess
you mean
I'm just immune
there's
to
something
its charms
beyond
now.
What we've talked about? Should we really discuss this?
I guess I can't be creeped out anymore by this game, but when you get your option guys, they're like, hi. Like there's a little voice, like a little voice sample that's like, hi. Like the only thing
is
I
that,
can really think of
is that really,
like
the, is that really putting the CD to you, Slur?
It really is. No, but it's so funny. It's like the only thing I can think of, for some reason, I always think of like, oh, okay, well, so I guess it's almost like I feel like this game is trying to like pick me up in a gay bar or something like that.
No, wait.
I don't mean that in a bad way or anything, but it's like it's just kind of funny. It's like kind of like hi. It's like, oh, that's so.
Oh,
so
okay,
weird.
Okay. I was going to ask, what is the tone exactly? I remember my former roommate. His little brother came to visit him a couple times when we were in college. This kid was like 17 or 18. He's older now, but he had this weird trick or joke he would play on people, or it was just an idiosyncrasy that he had, where whenever he was like sitting in a room and somebody came into the room, he would greet them by saying, hi. Like, just in this very whimpering kind of voice.
It was just a habit.
It always creeped people out. And I used to think it was such a brilliant comedic theme because it's so understated. It doesn't mean anything. It's not really like laugh out loud funny. It's just bizarre and it's unsettling. And the effect it has on people is priceless. And it just sounds exactly like what you're describing in Choaniki.
Yeah, well, it's like the first time I was playing the game and I heard that, I was like, what? Wait a minute, what?
Hi.
It's like, okay, my option.
Did you say hi back?
That's great. That almost makes me want to download
it's a little
just
different.
To hear that.
It's a little
did you
different
say
different.
Hi back, John?
Maybe.
It's a little different from Gradius 2, where it just tells you, shoot it in the eye. Like, that's what the speech is in that.
Oh, they could put that in Choaniki too. Shoot it in
no.
the eye.
No. New topic. Now.
Alright, we're done. That's it.
That's it, yeah.
So, cooked. Yeah.
Cooked.
Oh, actually, on a similar topic,
no.
I also rented Caligula last week on DVD.
Yeah, Caligula.
That was fun. And
yeah, so what
Netflix,
was the deal with that? I've heard
Caligula.
So many bad things about it. Like, it's so naughty.
You know, Caligula is, the original investors dropped out after they saw, like, how much, like, nudity and sex there was going to be in the movie.
Uh-huh.
So Penthouse International Pictures Films picked it up. So it was literally bankrolled by a porn producer in the final days. Mm-hmm. But it's weird because it is this like really trashy kind of B movie grade production, and yet it's clearly had a ton of money behind it. The sets are amazing. I mean, a lot of the scenes have 300-400 extras in there, all in costume and everything. And you know, it's about the fourth Roman emperor, Caligula. He was only emperor for a few years, and he was a total crackhead. I mean, he was really, really nuts, very psychotic. Thought he was a god, or at least told people he was a god. Totally sex obsessed. And the thing is, it's certainly not a movie I would watch with my parents in the room, but it's not really porn either, because it's very disturbing. I mean, a lot of it is based on historical accounts of what the emperor actually did. Some of them are sexually related. Some of them are just really fucking violent and cruel and awful. So, I mean, it's not really that titillating or erotic, because there's too much nasty shit thrown in there. So, you know, unless you're just like really perverted. And I mean, you know, the crazy thing is they have all these amazing actors in there, like Peter O'Toole. Helen Mirren plays his wife, and she's like really hot. I mean, this was back in 1980, I think, but like back then Helen Mirren, she was pretty damn good looking woman, you know, before she played the Queen of England, of course. And you've got like John Gielgud is in it. He plays Tiberius's advisor, and then Malcolm McDowell plays Caligula. And I think he's awesome. I mean, it's way overacted and like really out there, but it fits the character. And that's kind of how I feel about the whole movie. Like, yes, it's totally gratuitous and really over the top, but because of that, I think it's probably the most historically accurate movie about ancient Rome, because, I mean, everything we know about Rome, it pretty much was like that. Like, the emperor had this constant orgy going on in his chambers, and, you know, if he was unsatisfied with their presence, he would clap his hands and say, "Get to it!" And then everybody would kind of wake up and start grinding each other again. I mean, that scene is actually in the movie. It's like, yeah, that probably happened. So it's kind of shocking to see it on film, and especially with these great actors, you know, it's like, this seems so below them. But at the same time, it's like, I'm glad somebody had the balls to make a movie about Rome that's actually kind of like how it probably really was, even though it is trashy, you know, like that's accurate. So I think it's fascinating. It's not a great movie. The direction's pretty terrible, but, you know, and if you're not too squeamish to see naked people, I think it's, interesting. It's an interesting movie experiment. Let's put it that way. I think it's something it's worth watching at least once. Did I just disturb it?
I have nothing to say about that topic.
Yeah, I just wanted to get away from Choaniki, but maybe I really didn't.
Yeah, I like how we drove that bus into a whole different seedy part of town.
Yeah, that's getting away from Choaniki in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. We just escaped Compton and got into
Watts, I guess.
Yes, thank you. I just blinked.
We were
rapping
it's
before
like
we started the show, and now I can't even remember.
Of Choaniki, and all you did was hit the accelerator. You didn't turn the steering wheel.
Yep. now,
sorry. I thought it was interesting.
Now, Johnny, have you talked to Evan what you think of that movie? Have you discussed it with him?
Don't.
Because I remember he was asking that in the forums. Like, he was like, can't wait to see what you think about that. Kind of, you know, smirking.
I didn't think that was Evan. I thought it was somebody else.
No,
but,
it was trust me.
Yeah,
if you talk about films on the forums, it's kind of like the Evan signal.
Yeah, nothing else.
He clearly reads the forums, otherwise you wouldn't pick up on the fact that there's talk about films afoot. But if it's about anything else, he's not interested.
It is about films, you are due at least 7,000 posts on the nature of the artist and the filmmaker.
Yeah, I think when Evan actually comes on the forums, he actually, the first thing he does when he comes in, he just does a search, and he's like, John Cassavetes, search. And he just sees if there's like, you know, what, then he goes,
that's great.
But he just has to
well, maybe that. That's how he does it, yeah.
I haven't actually seen a Cassavetes film, but I might have one on my Netflix queue. It's some guy, you know, I've heard his name enough. I want to check it out at least. But Anyway, I don't think I've talked about Caligula with Evan. I think I've probably mentioned it to him once or twice, but I don't even remember what he said about it. But he's going to be on the show in the next few weeks. We're going to have him on here, so maybe we can bring it up then. But, you know,
oh,
Evan, Evan may come off as being very pretentious about film, but he's also very knowledgeable and fun to talk to. I mean, he and I once had... I think this was at E3. It was like 2 in the morning, and we had this like 2-hour discussion about 2001 A Space Odyssey, I think, that was awesome. And we were talking about why does Hal start singing Daisy right before he, you know, dies or goes out of commission, and why does he start killing off the people? I mean, what's his motivation? What's the meaning of the beginning of the movie with the cavemen and everything? So, it's just really fun to talk to him about this stuff. I mean, I remember, Evan, this was back before either one of us worked on the site. We were friends from the Informant and the Insider message boards on Nintendo.com, and we would do stuff like we would both rent the movie Dune and would watch it on our computers because we didn't have DVD players for our TVs yet, but we had DVD drives for our computers. And we would watch it on our computers and keep AIM open and chat about it as the movie went on.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like we did that with at least one other movie as well. It was just really fun to... I mean, I love talking to Evan about movies because he is very intelligent about that kind of thing, and it's something that we have in common. You know,
no.
I don't know as much about film as he does, but I like to talk about it, and I like to think about it. So,
Evan,
what's going on with you guys?
James, I'm gonna cede to you.
Oh,
come on.
Jeez, thanks.
James, what's up with you, man?
All right, so I've had a pretty busy week, and you know, I'm gonna give you the play-by-play of everything I've done this week.
Everything that's interesting.
Rough
how about
teeth.
That?
No.
So
if you can't reach the level of Caligula, that's your watermark.
Choaniki and Caligula, and go.
Well, I. I organized a horse orgy, if that counts.
What?
Nice.
You have succeeded. Continue.
Is that actually what a community organizer does?
Oh, why didn't I sign up for that job? Jesus.
Episode 103.2.
Oh, my God.
No. What I've done might be the video game equivalent of Caligula in that I have attempted to continue to play No More Heroes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But there's not a whole lot to say about it beyond the fact that it is still fucking bizarre. Ben, it's weird because the game is...
That's not going to change. In fact, it gets more bizarre at the end.
And it's like the game is acutely aware of the fact that it's bizarre and mocks you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And just playing it, the only thing I really have to add to what I said last week is that the game feels unfinished. I mean, I haven't beaten it yet, but the whole immersive world thing, it feels like there's only 10 buildings in this giant city you can even interact with.
Yeah, the world, the city is so terrible. But, you know, I don't think it's unfinished. I think he just didn't care. I think that was probably the way he envisioned it.
But I'm...
Like, it's supposed to be sort of a mockery of an American metropolis, right? So, basically, the only interesting things in there are the sword shop and the movie store and the baseball stadium. And, like, that's all there is.
But, I mean, I feel like they could have... You know, he could have taken his weird world that he had, you know, done a pretty good job creating and actually, you know, made it alive by letting you interact with people at least. I mean, the only way you can interact with someone is to try to run them over with your motorcycle.
Yeah.
And you can't even do that. So what's the fun there? I mean, they sort of materialize next to you and scream.
Yeah, I mean, and there are barely any people on the streets.
Yeah, it's
barely any
so
other cars
abandoned. It's
on
like
the road.
Some post-apocalyptic world where everybody has polo shirts on.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty weird.
Yeah, I feel like it just...
It's not a very good city.
The game could have been so much more, I don't know, immersive if they had put life to this weird world they had.
Yeah, but I don't think that was the point. I don't really think they were going for immersion. You know, I think they were going to make a statement, a cultural statement. And, I'm not saying it's a great statement or that it's made very well, but I think that was their intention, not to create something. You know, they weren't trying to outdo GTA.
No, I'm not suggesting
they don't
they
really
should,
need
but
to,
I mean, I think
do,
he could have made his statement if the world was actually interactive more effectively.
I just think he shouldn't have put the open world in there. I think that game, you know, it's already very linear. I think, why not just take the bullshit out and just, when you finish one mission, you start the next?
Well, I mean,
you know, you don't have to do these stupid jobs. You just keep moving on through it. Yeah, it would have made the game half the length, but it also would have killed
than that.
Most of
it would have made
complaints.
It would have made the game like 6 hours.
That's fine.
See, I'm not
that would have been
I'm
fine
not bothered
with me.
By
it,
the
know, it,
the jobs though. In most cases, because the actual jobs are only what, like 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Yeah, I made most of my money from assassination.
Yeah, and then when then you games. Get an assassination or a set of assassinations you can carry out after you get the job, after you complete.
And you can some
job.
You know the random assassinations you can just do them over and over.
You can
again.
Do all the assassinations over and over again.
Oh,
you can
okay,
just reselect them and just do them again. So like I did a Pizza the Hut like 5 times because it paid damn good money.
Yep.
They actually they actually had the same name as Baseballs, Pizza the Hut.
Yeah.
Oh my
yeah.
god.
But wow. in this case, it's a national pizza chain. So I mean, they didn't even try not to get sued. It's coming to open a location in Santa Destroy, and the local pizza chain isn't happy about it. So they want you to assassinate their CEO.
Nice.
So in this parking garage, he and his like bodyguards, you kill them, and then like two levels later, you get another mission. Pizza the Hut returns, and their new CEO is in town in the same freaking parking deck with the same bodyguards, and you kill him too.
By the way, this reminds me of something. I don't know if you guys all know that all know this, but I studied abroad in Russia about 5 years ago for one summer, and there was a Pizza Hut very close to where I took my classes, and so we went there once or twice. You know, I didn't want to eat a lot of American food while I was there, but I thought it'd be a novelty to go to a Pizza Hut in Russia. But I loved the sign, because the sign, instead of using, there's not really a Russian word for pizza, and instead of trying to translate the word hut into house or cottage or something, you know, they didn't really translate it, so it's just transliterated. And the way they wrote it with Russian phonetics, you can't really say hut exactly the way it is in English. So the way that they wrote it out in Russian, it's pronounced hat, like hat. So it looks like Pizza Hat. And the funny thing is, if you think about that sort of red roof, you know, that Pizza Huts used to have, that the actual building had this weird red mm-hmm. roof. Well, now, you know, a lot of Pizza Huts aren't in their own building at all. They're like part of a shopping
right.
mall or a strip mall or something. So since they don't have the actual red roof, the red roof is now part of their logo. And it appears above the words Pizza Hut. So in Russia, the store is called Pizza Hat, and this red roof actually looks like a big red hat over the logo. And it cracked me up every single time I went by there. They also had this weird thing where you could order a pizza and get a free beer, which I don't think you would ever see in America.
Johnny Pizza Hat Mets.
Pizza Hat. I that still cracks me up when I think about it, because I can see the logo and it's just it's.
You don't sound cracked up to me, man. I don't
cracked
I don't
up.
Hear the laughing.
What do you mean? No, in my mind.
Oh.
I'm laughing to myself. I don't want to give you the pleasure.
Uh huh. You know, I could make a the pleasure joke considering how this podcast's already gone, but it's just not worth it.
This is rated X podcast.
This is like 103 except really quiet. They're just like, yep.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a lot less boisterous, less annoying, I would say.
Oh, lay in the
That's
world.
Only because you're on it and not
war!
The primary target.
Oh, it's war! It's war!
It's broken out right in front of us, Greg. Hug me. Hug
you want
me, Greg,
to call it? It's war.
I enjoyed 103, but I thought it went on for too long.
I'll say one thing.
If
you know
it
it's a war,
loud.
You know it's a war when Geraldo gives away Johnny's troop positions. Then you know it's a war.
the troops are actually hiding behind
there,
his
Greg.
Mustache.
Got any more winners
oh,
from 2002
on.
You can pull
you're,
on out?
You're a reporter. Just whatever you do, just don't lose the war. Just don't do that. All right? That's the one thing you can't do.
Yeah, oh God. Did they? I hope they sent Geraldo back to do like pregnancy tests or something after that.
Somebody's great.
Not pregnancy tests, paternity
almost
test.
Daily. Almost.
Geraldo Rivera still not pregnant.
actually, that's what they. You know, Montel and Mari Povich. They should move on. The paternity test thing is so passe now. They should do pregnancy tests on the show. Like, you are not the mother.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
John, jeez. I think I'm just totally lost where I was gonna go with this one, but
James dying right in front of us.
I'm glad that so far we've had a bunch of jokes about the proclivities.
Let's not have a meta discussion about the show while the show is
honestly,
still going on. How about that? Let's just keep it rolling.
This phrase may not mean anything to American people, but it pretty much sums up. It's called sub carry on humor. That's pretty much it.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah,
it's all those
really terrible British comedy movies like Carry On, whatever, that were just like the worst crappy innuendo gags ever.
I'm glad to say I haven't.
Is this kind of like Bob?
No, I haven't fucking seen. I don't want to see them, but I know what they are. They're awful, and we're probably worse.
So are they sort of like scary movie in America? Like, because the bane of our film industry is the spoof movie, which I sort of respect the original.
Oh yeah,
the
old
genre,
school
like
spoof movies.
Airplane
are
or the first Naked Gun movie or Police Academy, but like in past years, you've got shit like Epic Movie, which. Yeah.
When, like,
dear
literally
God,
you're spoofing
I mean,
stuff that came out,
awful.
Like, 3 weeks ago.
No, sometimes they're spoofing stuff that hasn't even come out yet. They're spoofing the commercials.
They're spoofing the trailer, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's just
Actually, did you know Eli...
God damn!
I don't know if you guys have seen Tropic Thunder, but it has more, like, great fake trailers before the movie starts, just like Grindhouse did. And Eli Roth, who directed one of the fake trailers, the Thanksgiving trailer in Grindhouse, is actually working on a movie called Trailer Trash that is entirely
fake trailers.
Oh, God.
I think it's coming out next year, hopefully, but he's bringing in like 20 other famous directors, and they're all directing a piece of it. So it's sort of like Parisia Tam, but on the opposite end of the scale. It's one of these anthology movies,
I'd rather
with
that
a lot,
than
a lot of
Hostel
different
Part 3. I think we can all agree on that.
Exactly. I have no interest in Hostel Part
anyway. Yeah, I love the part. It's like, oh yeah, we planned this. The whole time. It's all...
Exactly. It's not a sequel. It's a completion of the original scope.
It's all components in a wider jigsaw plan, you know.
We had to tell the rest of the story.
I mean, to be honest, the Roman numerals after saw is pretentious enough.
Yeah.
But par is over the line. That's too much.
Can we just get a crossover between those two movies?
Yeah, really.
It'll happen.
We should have like a Freddy versus Jason or Aliens versus Predator type.
Yeah, it'll happen.
Saw versus Hostel.
It'll just like compete to be the most hardcore. You know, that's it.
Well, and the sad thing is, Eli Roth, and I'm not sure where he got the cred. I'd have to look at his filmography, but he's widely considered a very talented director, and yet now he's made two awful Hostel movies. It's like. Everybody's kind of waiting for him to like actually live up to this hype or to the potential that he supposedly has. Maybe Trailer Trash will be the one. I've heard that he's planning to bring in at least Tarantino and Rodriguez to develop two of the trailers, and I don't know who else, but I really can't wait. I hope after seeing the ones for Tropic Thunder, I hope Ben Stiller's going to make one, because I enjoy Tropic Thunder, but the trailers were honestly funnier than the movie itself. And I have to give him some credit for that. Mm. So,
sounds like sort of film does WarioWare, actually.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it, man. Yeah. So, Greg, I mean, what's going on with you? What you've been playing?
Well,
what you've been
the last
watching,
week,
listening
I finished,
to, traveling?
I finally got around to finishing my Bangaia review. It took a bit longer than I would have liked, but I did get the chance to pretty much. I've beaten all but a handful of the 170 levels that are on there.
Above and beyond the Call of Duty.
Yeah,
sir.
And did you, I did. Oh god!
Did you create any awesome noise based levels?
I haven't created a whole lot of things yet, but I did actually. The IGN are having IGN are sort of being the clearinghouse for this like publicity thing that the Western publishers doing D3 Publisher, which is like a sort of game designers like level design contest. So they've got a bunch of guys from places like Infinity Ward and Naughty Dog, And sort of you've got like a, about, I think it's about seven different development houses, and they've made
two studios well known for their support of Nintendo.
Yeah, I guess it's just who Nintendo they could platforms. Get, but you know, each design a Bangaia level, and then you know you can obviously download the audio file off IGN, and then you can vote in a poll, and I think it's like some sort of funding for game development or something is gonna be sort of apportioned off somewhere. But anyway, there's some of those levels are really quite cool, actually. And so there's some that are really quite ambitious and sort of big levels. You know, it proves you can make some really big, ambitious levels that are, you know, quite a bit more sort of epic than the small contained ones that you generally tend to go. There are some bigger ones in the game, but there's some really cool stuff in there. And obviously, it's with all the same tools that you can use. Although presumably honed by years in the development community in terms of the ingenuity side. But yeah, I mean, you can make some really cool stuff with this, and that's going to be the interesting part of the lasting appeal of the game is just that, you know, hopefully if there's a sort of, because I mean the trading's kind of I mean, John, you can sort of speak to this a bit in terms of, it's kind of like not that consistent. I don't think I've got a very good pair of headphones for it, and it's like very hit and miss.
Yeah, I use some some earbud headphones for it, and they work pretty well, but still a lot of it depends on how you record it. Like I created one, the one that I was going to make for the podcast, and that one I just recorded it way too loud. So when you play it back, it always cuts off, and it keeps saying that, you know, the source is too loud and everything. So it's hit or miss.
It is hit or miss. But on the real plus side of that trade off is the fact that it is unfettered and stuff, and you will hopefully, if you will get kind of a community that's going to continue to develop some really cool levels and things over time, and that'll spur other people to do it, and it'll be sort of self-sustaining sort of thing, and there's definitely potential for some cool stuff, so it could have a life of its own beyond that. But I struggled with the score because it is such a weird game in terms of the structure's weird, the whole, you know, emphasis on level user generated content's weird, it was difficult for me to say, you know, really sort of in a quantified way. You know, you should always read the text of reviews. I think we could agree on that. Mm-hmm. That's far better way.
Well, Greg, I think in this case it's especially important. And I was very impressed with how you handled sort of the ending of that review, where you made a very clear distinction in your conclusion between recommending the game and rating the game or criticizing the game. I mean, you gave it a 9 out of 10, and you said basically it's superb, you know, it's excellent. And at the same time, you said it's going to appeal to a very small group of gamers. And just be aware of that. I mean, if you are the kind of person who's going to like this, be aware that it's great. And if you're not, be aware that despite the very high quality of how it's produced, you may not enjoy it because it's, you know, it's so narrow.
Yeah,
focused.
I mean, it is.
That really spoke to me because I'm tempted by the fact that it's coming so, you know, it's getting these rave reviews and everything, and it's treasure, and I know that it's well made, but at the same time, I feel like it's probably not for me.
I mean,
you know? So
it is.
I really appreciated
it's super niche in the sense that even for treasure fans, it's kind of not going to hit all the sort of tick all the boxes for them. Because a lot of treasure fans are going to be into the boss battles and the linear structure and the, you know, all that kind of stuff, and that's not there. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's kind of a niche within the treasure fan base, which is a pretty niche-y kind of element in itself. So it really is very. I mean, you know, even for me, I don't feel like it's that targeted at me, even, you know, relatively. But
you can see past.
But you
that
could still recognize
the
quality
well
that's in there, and the sort of, and it is refreshing.
That's a sign of a good.
And
reviewer,
and it's
so
and it's refreshing in it as it is refreshing in a way as well to get something different in that set. Yeah, that kind of works on different levels, and that is. I mean, you know, it's really weird for me. Like sometimes we kind of mention this with stuff like Wheel of Golf and stuff that, you know, sometimes unlockable stuff. It just seems so unnecessary. It seems so superfluous, and it's just a, you know, an exercise in extending the life of the game and trying to sort of create a progression where there really isn't one. Whereas, you know, in this case, we just say, well, forget all that. Just get into it. Just play. And I mean, that's good. But on the other hand, I think when it is really well done and it's kind of sufficiently rationalised on gameplay or narrative or any other kind of ways, sort of this artificial kind of progression can actually be a really good thing. because it actually it makes you it engages you and it absorbs you into the game, and then you get better as it goes on and things like that. So all of that's not in Bangoyo. It's just bang, here it is, do with it what you will. Very laissez-faire. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of people, even people who are amenable to action games and all that, probably won't get the most out of it. I just, you know, that's my assessment anyway. But that doesn't really take away from its quality. It is a very, very good game. And I think it came out just a couple of weeks ago in Europe, and generally at a lower price. Because DS games are very expensive, even relative to Wii games, for instance. I mean, I think your usual starting price for a DS game is £25. And then a Wii game will be £30. So they're far closer together than they are in America. But in this case, I think Bangoyo, you can commonly find it for significantly under £20. So it's, I don't know whether it's officially a budget title or anything, but you can find it for much more reasonable prices. So European gamers may, if that helps them, you know, take the plunge with something that is, I suppose, a kind of a risky investment in a sense, then perhaps that's worth bearing in mind. And one other thing about Treasure, actually, we just got through today, was that one of their Wii games has become known what it is. And
oh, really?
Somewhat disappointingly to some, probably, including myself, is that it's a Bleach fighting game for Wii, 3D one. So this is not something they've done before. Yeah. They've developed the DS 2D Bleach fighting games, but not the ones that were on Wii. And now the same team is doing one for Wii. So, I mean, it could be interesting, but 3D fighting games on Wii, generally, you know, I don't know, it's not something I'm particularly enthused by. I don't own any of them.
Yeah, and I've heard that it does have online fighting, online battles, which is kind of, that's a nice feature. Not many Wii fighting games have that. You know, I think there's a Dragon Ball Z game coming out this year that has online. I am almost positive that the new Naruto fighting game for Wii has online. I want to say that they mentioned that at E3, but there's a conference call this week, and we should know more about that, so I don't take my word for it right now.
Yeah. It's a Snap announcement as well.
It's a nice feature, but of course it depends on your interest level in the game, period, and how good the game is. Again, as we've said many times, online play is kind of something that we tend to get excited about, but it's kind of worthless unless if the game isn't.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure if I should say this or not, so if I shouldn't, I'll edit it out, but I pity whatever poor soul has to go to the Naruto phone conference.
Well, I'm sure we have at least one
well,
person
it's
on
not
staff
that.
Who's a big
it's
fan.
It's actually the people, because I remember I did one a couple months ago. It's the Naruto-based fan sites that they ask these questions and you're just like, God.
Right. They're not video game sites. They're just manga.
You need to be ashamed
anime,
of yourself right now.
Oh, judgment.
You know, they probably think the same thing about you when you ask a game.
Yes, but they would be wrong.
Question.
So confident, so absolute.
Look,
jeez,
when they ask,
I'm trying
when
to be
they
diplomatic
asked about some of these
here,
things,
but
I was like, I am this close to hanging up.
Yeah. Oh, that I mean, would have showed them. They would have.
Well, no,
that would have been pretty much tantamount to you waving your hand in front of their face and go, "You want to go home and rethink your life."
You know, I mean, no, but the best part is people hung up, and I know this because a certain corporate gaming site hung up halfway through. This really loud tone goes off, and then the announcer will say that person just left. Like, dang,
out of the bag. In that case, it might be worth doing.
Blank from blank has just signed off.
Every self-respecting game journalist has just signed off. Now it's just Naruto nerds.
Those kind of conference calls are kind of brutal if you are not already fairly invested in the material. Yeah. They're just kind of, they tend to be so details oriented that.
The only thing knowing about the franchise is that it's for children. It was very, very, very complicated.
I think I can recount here. I don't think we've ever talked about it on the podcast, but somebody stop me if we did a long time ago. But I once sat in on the worst conference call ever. Billy was there with Game Informer, and I think Chris Kohler might have been on the line too. But it was a Nintendo of America conference call about the first Pokemon game for GameCube, whatever that one was called. Pokemon Coliseum.
Yes.
Actually. And I remember Billy asking the producer of the game why they spelled Coliseum wrong in the title. Which they did. They really did spell it wrong.
And nice.
I just remember thinking, oh my god, this is so indicative of how shitty this call has been. And Nintendo got a lot of crap for it from the media. You know, the fans didn't have direct access to what went down during the call, but it was so bad. The thing is, they brought in like 12 people from the development team, and they're all Japanese, so all the things they said had to be translated. They went around the table, all of them gave their little spiel, but mostly it was like, hi, I'm the art director for this game, please play the game. I mean, they had nothing to say about it whatsoever. And they spent way too long on all those introductions, and then when it came time for our questions, they didn't really want to answer the questions that we had. You know, we were asking, like, why doesn't it have online play if GameCube has a modem and people want to battle Pokemon online and stuff like that, and just, like, really shitty answers, and the whole thing just took forever. It was the worst. I mean, it was like a two-hour conference call.
Yeah,
I wanted to shoot myself the entire
time. Yeah, I've only done
one,
and my desire to do them has greatly diminished from it.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, conference calls in general are pretty terrible. I mean, I'm just saying that my point of bringing that up is it's not just D3's problem. It's not just Naruto that's hard to sit through. Even Nintendo's conference calls are often really bad, and they haven't done any in the past couple of years, maybe because of that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine that at least with the Coliseum question, I couldn't have gotten that out with a straight face. I would just die. I'd have been like,
no. Actually, Billy's really good to ask that kind of thing at a press conference or a round table. You can always count on Billy asking something that everybody else kind of wants to ask, but they don't have the guts to do it. Billy will do it. He'll pull it off.
Do you know what their answer
was
to that question?
It was one of the greatest PR spins I've ever heard. It was something like, we wanted it's our own creative product, and we wanted to be creative about how we spell it or something like that. Giant steaming pile of shit. It was so funny. Oh, dude, Billy. I called Billy after the call was over, and we laughed about it for a good half hour. Just, it was so bad. Anyway, so maybe we should kind of move into the final stages and talk about DLC Mondays this week. Just briefly, we've already discussed Chouaniki. That's out for virtual console, 900 points. We've also got Final Soldier, which is another TurboGrafx game. It's an import, so it's 700. It's not a CD game, but it's a sequel to Star Soldier. It's basically a vertically scrolling shoot 'em up game. We actually got two shoot 'em ups this week on Virtual Console.
Yeah.
It's like
TV16
playing a great show.
TV16.
If one of them wasn't Chouaniki, I would be pissed. But I think you can forgive a lot for them. I'm just astonished that Chouaniki came to America. I'm still blown away by
now,
it.
Now, since we've talked about Chouaniki for like 20 disturbing
minutes.
Not
nearly enough.
Shut up, John. All right, Final Soldier is actually cheaper because it wasn't a CD game. It's 700 points. And
that's right. I mentioned that. If you
it came out in Europe back in May,
seconds.
I think.
Yeah, back in the Hanabi Festival before the one that just finished. Yeah.
And it features the 5-minute and 2-minute challenges that our WiiWare title has.
Yeah, yeah. I think all the Star Soldier
and,
games.
And it features a fan fucking tastic assortment of 7 levels.
Well, you know,
they're all like that, even though
it's called...
You know, Ikaruga has 5.
Yeah, go on, Johnny.
So there you go.
I mean,
I'm just saying, shoot 'em ups don't have
I mean, if
levels,
if you've played Superstar Soldier or Soldier Blade or even Blazing Lasers on Virtual Console, Final Soldier.
Blazing Lasers.
Yeah, otherwise known as Gunhead.
Badass.
Gunhead. Yeah,
Without
the
A.
I
like the fact that when that got introduced to another region, the public was just like, yeah, Blazing Lasers, let's go with something more nominal, like Gunhead.
The Gunhead was the original name, I think.
Somebody actually thought Blazing Lasers was better.
Yeah.
Gunhead was also considered as an alternate title for Chouaniki.
Nice.
YMCA.
Even though it's called Final Soldier, it is of course not the last in the Star Soldier series.
No, because anytime a game has
it's
final
it's
title,
much like
it's
Final
the
13th, the final chapter, which was number 4 of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like Final Fantasy 1.
But at least there was the implication that that might actually be the final game.
Final Fantasy actually was could have been the final game Square ever made. That's kind of why they called it that.
Yeah.
And then it saved the company, and
then
like,
they went on to make
we're
the
not changing the name.
Then they went on to make the really racist Tom.
Oh no, the Tom Sawyer game was before Final Fantasy.
Oh,
I'm
that's right.
Sure.
That was the game they made before it.
By the way, that's the new game that if it ever comes to Virtual Console, I'll shit
in America. The goalposts have been moved.
Indeed, Chouinicki was one level, but if the Tom Sawyer game comes to America, that's like a whole new level of insanity on Nintendo of America's part.
It's Nintendo and Square, because Square doesn't even acknowledge that game existed, probably, because it is so
if they know what's
racist.
Good for them, they wouldn't.
It's like one of the most racist Japanese games ever made, and some of the Japanese games are pretty racist.
Final Fantasy VII's pretty racist, for that matter. And that did come
The
to
Japanese
America.
Prejudice is just classic. It reminds me of an absolutely priceless line from Scott. There's a priceless line from Scott Sharkey on the Retronauts podcast, which is a Japanese joke about gay people pretty much amounts to that gay people exist.
And that's basically what the joke is. Yeah. Chouinicki, I guess. Yep.
Although not actual gay people, some sort of obscene, ridiculous, offensive caricature of what gay people like. I mean, it's... Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, the funny thing was, when I was in D.C., it was back in March, I was eating in this cafe, and there were two people from Japan there, and I knew one was an embassy employee, because I could tell by her badge. The other one, I think, was a translator. And she said something, and I have... Yeah, I studied Japanese for a while, so I remember some words. And she said the word – one of them said the word for Korean person and then continued on a phrase, and they both started laughing really hard. So I have to assume what they said was some sort of racist joke about Koreans.
Well, yeah, I've heard that there is a lot of prejudice against Koreans.
Oh, yeah. Koreans in Japan will often adopt Japanese names so they don't feel the prejudice.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
But just how they did it in, you know, a very public cafe right on Embassy Row. That was very, very crowded. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that's unusual. Back to DLC Mondays. The other game that came out this week, and I can talk about this in some detail, is Groovin' Blocks, which is a WiiWare game.
Groovin' Blocks!
It's 800 points.
Is it like Breaking Blocks?
No, the best way to describe it is it's kind of like Luminous or Meteos. And I mean that to... In the sense that it is very good, and also it plays quite a bit like those games. So you have on easy mode, you have columns of three blocks, and they're different colors. They're three different, you know, usually three different colors in that column, and you can press a button to shuffle through them so that you determine what order they fall in, basically. And it's like Tetris, you know. You start with a blank field, and you're just dropping the blocks, and you try to match at least three in a row of the same color horizontally or vertically. And so it really plays very much like Luminous or Meteos in that sense. You're just trying to match colors, and once you do, they disappear off the board, and you keep going. If it hits the top of the screen, then it's game over. But what really for that matter, that part of it, just the pure straightforward puzzle game of it, although not very original, works great. It looks good. It's fun to play. I have no issues with it. By the way, there's no motion control. You play it like NES style with the remote, or you plug in the classic controller. So it's a very straightforward kind of puzzle game. Then on top of that, there's this other layer of complexity that's quite interesting, where every stage in the game is set to a song. So it's not like marathon mode in Tetris, where you just play for hours until you die. The game is more like Meteos. It's broken up into like 2 or 3 minute chunks, and basically you're playing to a song. Once the song ends, that's the end of the level. Whatever score you have, that's the score you got, and then you can play it again if you want to. So the influence of the song is first that it kind of controls the amount of time that the stage takes to play through, and then also the game wants you to play to the beat of the song. And it's less complicated than it sounds. Basically, you have the beat. These are all kind of sort of techno-y, you know, electronica songs that most of them have pretty strong beats that are easy to make out. There's also a visual indication on the screen of when the beats are coming. So if you're not good at listening to the beat by the music, you can just keep an eye on that indicator and just try to play, you know, just try to time it visually. So you don't have to be really super good. You don't have to be like a DDR player in order to play this, although it helps. But the idea is that, you know, in Tetris has this mechanic where you just push it down on the controller and it just drops the block straight down, right? So that is very important in Groovin' Blocks, because the idea is that you want to push down to drop the block on the beat. You don't have to. You can just wait for the block to sink down on its own if you don't want to try to mess with the beat. But if you want to try to play with the beat, and you drop the blocks on the beat of the music, you get bonus points. The power-ups are more effective. Eventually build up a multiplier. And it's actually the structure of the game is really cool, because it encourages you to learn to play the game properly and actually use this beat mechanic, you know, actually pay attention to the music, because your score at the end of the level determines how many stars you get on the level. It's like your ranking, basically. Mm-hmm. And then those stars are used to unlock more levels, more songs, and level up the power-ups in the game, which do things like destroy blocks or, you know, slow down the game or things like that. So it's not a super complicated game, and it's not like you're playing two different games at the same time. It's not nearly that daunting. It's just a very clever way to integrate rhythm style gameplay, or, you know, at least at rhythm at the most basic level. Literally, you're just listening to the rhythm of the song and trying to do something in time with the beat at a very primitive level. And, you know, integrating that with a very classic sort of derivative puzzle game, you know, very simple, straightforward puzzle game. And it works really well. It's actually really fun. The music is great. I don't even usually like techno music, and I think this sounds really good. And I'm actually finding myself, like, trying to nod my head or tap my foot to the music, because I really want to hit those beats, because it helps you so much to play the game. It helps you get such a better score, and it just makes everything work better if you can do that. So it's a pretty cool idea, and it works great, and it's cheap. I mean, it's eight bucks, whereas there's plenty of games on WiiWare that are $10 that aren't nearly this deep or as interesting. So I'm liking it so far. I'm on the review, and I haven't played it enough to write the review yet, so I can't make a serious recommendation. But so far, I'm very impressed with it.
No, it sounds okay. like a very nice use of WiiWare, you know, because it's a fairly traditional game, really. But, you know, that's the thing about WiiWare. Yes, it's one way of sort of quietly sort of slipping a traditional game under the door of Wii. Put it on WiiWare, if it's good, I mean, who cares if it's, you know, not particularly, like, the production values are obviously not going to be that high or whatever, because if it's fun, that's really what WiiWare should be about. And I mean, it has been about that to an extent, but
I think this is the kind of thing that could easily be done on Xbox Live Arcade and would be beloved there. It's sort of like Poker Smash, you know. It's sort of just a twist on a very traditional kind of gameplay. And Poker Smash was very popular on Xbox Live Arcade, and I actually asked the developer, like, are you planning on putting this on Xbox? Because there's nothing Wii specific about it, it doesn't use a controller or for anything. And and they're like, yeah, we're considering it, but, you know, we decided for whatever reason to do WiiWare first, and I think we should be glad about that, because it's really cool. It's probably one of the highest quality WiiWare games yet, in my, you know, of the ones I've seen. It definitely is.
Who's the developer of this?
They're called Empty Clip Studios.
And do we know of anything else they made?
Well, it's their first game, and they are looking at producing it for other platforms, including possibly like a DS version or even like a disc-based Wii version with a lot of more music and some extra features and things. But it's their first game, but the guys who founded the studio and, like, co-designed the game, I guess, come from, like, let's say, like, LucasArts and Ubisoft or something. But they have a pretty strong pedigree.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're experienced. They're, like, industry veterans, and they branched out, made their own studio, and, you know, and they basically thought WiiWare was a good way to start out.
Now,
so I hope they find success, because I think it's an impressive.
Yeah, now
first
it makes
effort.
Me wonder. I wonder why, if they did that just because it's maybe cheaper to do like a WiiWare game in terms of, you know, what they have to pay Nintendo.
Yeah, I'm sure
compared
that's
to what they have to pay
it.
Microsoft.
Yeah, Nintendo have kind of voiced that they're pretty sort of hands off, aren't they? They let you keep more than with the other services.
Yeah.
Yeah, and probably what they're hoping to do is make some capital this way, and then they can use that to finance a port to Xbox, where they're going to have to do like higher definition assets. You know, their art's going to have to be upgraded, so it's going to be a little more expensive, and they'll have to pay for the crazy 360 certification process, you know, all that. So I'm sure they're using this to kind of finance other versions and eventually get to like a hard copy retail product version of it, or maybe a sequel to it, or something like that. And then from there, maybe they can start branching out to do
Helps that the Wii has the biggest installed base out there. So I mean,
sure. No, it's interesting though, because relative to the install base, you wonder with Wii in terms of because of the way it handles online and stuff like that. To what extent people do? How many people are actually taking it online, buying stuff from the Wii Shop channel, whether it be Virtual Console or WiiWare? And what are they buying and stuff? And if you look at the charts, it's remarkable how they're always dominated by the same games. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always Super Mario Bros. 3 or Pokemon Ranch and Dr. Mario on the other side, or all the really brand name obvious stuff.
Yeah.
And what that actually tells you is that it's not the same cadre of people that have had the system for a long time that are sort of buying and buying and buying. It's not just them. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, they stay at the top of the charts because new people are taking it online and they are buying those big brand recognition games. So it says something about the fact that all these Wiis that are getting sold every month, and it's a lot, there is a significant proportion of those, to some extent at least, that are getting online and they're buying downloadable content. And I think that if that really does accentuate the need to get a storage solution, because, you know, it's working. People are buying. You know, it's not just this little group of, you know, hardcore people that are fussed about it. You know, they should be happy that more people are going to worry about it in the future, because it means more people are giving them their money.
That's right. And anecdotally, I think that people are, you know, casual Wii owners, people who you know, but basically buy it for Wii Sports, and then they start looking around and say, well, what else is there for this system? I think they are going to Virtual Console and they're buying Mario 64, Mario 3, the really obvious things. And to be honest, part of that is the way Nintendo markets it on the shop channel, because those things are very prominently displayed always.
Yeah.
So
and it's a self-perpetuating thing, because if they just look at popular titles, they'll see those, you know, the way the Wii Shop channel is organized, and then they buy it, and it keeps it popular. You know,
But I think people are buying those Mario and Zelda games, but they're also kind of looking through the catalog and seeing if anything catches their eye. I can say that my sister and her fiance have a Wii, and they're very casual users of the system, but they downloaded Bomberman 93. You know, my sister knew of Bomberman from when we rented it when we were 5 years old, but I wouldn't have expected her to download such a game. I would consider that a fairly niche game on Virtual Console. You know, it's a TurboGrafx game, and not many people ever played it before, but she saw that it was Bomberman and it was $6, and she was like, yeah, I'll do it. And that they actually, what they did was they bought like $50 worth of Wii points right when they got the system, and they still haven't spent them all. But every now and then they go in there and look through, and they're like, "Yeah, what's this? What's this? She probably bought Bubble Bobble or something." You know, like, so I think, yeah, they are buying the obvious games, but then they also, and part of it's because of the whole Space Bucks scheme where you can't use real cash. You have to buy, you know, these allotments of points, and you have some left over, and it kind of leads you to say, well, what can I spend the remainder on? And then you start looking a little bit deeper at the catalog. So I don't think, you know, people are going to buy Cho and Nini. But they might buy Grooving Blocks.
Especially in the American charts, like stuff like Defend Your Castle and some others, you know, that don't really have like a Mario or a Pokemon, like the two that are or Final Fantasy that are usually up the top, have done well as well. So it's not just the big brands that are doing the business.
Where are you finding these charts from?
You can come through a bunch of different sources. I know Stephen Totillo over the MTV Multiplayer blog does a bunch of stuff about Nintendo Online, including the data from the Nintendo channel. So I've probably seen a certain amount from him. There's some really interesting...
Yeah, I don't know how much I trust the Nintendo channel.
These charts aren't based on the Nintendo channel. That's just some other stuff he does. But there's some interesting analysis of the metrics on there, like in terms of, I think, the average user time for somebody that's connected to Nintendo Channel that owns Mario Kart is 23 hours, and the average for Smash Brothers is 60.
Whoa.
Yeah, wow. I mean, Smash Brothers is just way, way out in front of everything. You know, it's crazy.
That's unsurprising, though.
It is unsurprising, but when you really see it in action, it's quite startling. You know, because Mario Kart's kind of comparable in many ways. You know, for what it tries to achieve in terms.
Except it's completely broken.
It may be compromised now by hackers.
Well, no, it was broken because
of the blue shell. Now it's
compromised. To be fair, in the sense of as it analogous to Smash Brothers of getting the social part, getting four people round through the split screen options, that isn't necessarily broken because you can modify the items.
Much easier Mario Kart.
As well, yeah. So I mean that part of it's still kind of there, but there's various other things that apparently the average user has not put in enough time to feasibly finish Okami that's actually owns Okami.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's scary. I mean, does it say anything about the sales?
Obviously Nintendo Channel like is kind of a very small slice of how many users have actually put it up there. I can't remember. You do get numbers, and obviously they will reflect the trends. But you've got to have had it connected, which I assume is some fraction, obviously. And then there's the people that actually bother to go through and set up Nintendo Channel and then agree to share data and so on. So clearly it's not the most fair sample because there's certain kinds of people are going to do that.
Yeah.
But that's what is interesting with Okami, because you might think those people are going to be the most predisposed to have finished it. Because
and also be online as
it's
well.
It's a long game, though.
Chances are.
It's a long game.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is the average of people that you would think would be, you know, that would be inclined to finish it, and yet apparently on average they haven't. That's kind of interesting. But what you're not seeing is the distribution there. It could be getting dragged down by some outliers that are people that have played it for 5 minutes because they've got a million games and they haven't got around to it yet or something.
Mm-hmm. That's true. This is a frightening statistics discussion. This is ugly territory for me. So,
that's how you start and finish. You start with Cho and Iki, and you finish with the statistics.
Statistics.
Yeah, that's how you
perfect.
Statistics. Yeah. All right. Well, actually, I'll finish with one little extra bit about DLC Mondays. In that, next week, actually, probably by the time you hear this podcast, Secret of Mana will be out on Virtual Console in Japan.
Impressive.
Second in Setsu 2. That's pretty exciting. I mean, the trends have been that, you know, the Square games that come out in Japan come out in America, the ones that have been out here before. So, you know, ActRaiser and Super Mario RPG. I mean, there's not much to go on. They've released so few games on Virtual Console at all. But even, what was it?
King's Knight, whatever, terrible
NES game.
Even that
came to America. I fully expect.
Maybe
Secret
they'll do
Mana
that Secret of Evermore as well, which is the American
the
only one,
territories.
Right? I mean, because they're not remaking that.
No, they're not. That's never coming out on DS, but it's also never coming out in Japan for Virtual Console. It was never released in Japanese, so we're not going to have the precursor announcement of a Japan release for that one. It'll happen one day, and I fully expect Evermore will come out one day, and I hope when it does, people will check it out, because that game gets, you know, it's kind of considered like a second-class RPG for Super Nintendo. It's actually great. It's not as good as Secret of Mana, but it's still great, and I hope people check it out. But yeah, Secret of Mana itself should be out here, I would guess, within the month. I'm hoping.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. Secret of Mana did come out originally, unlike Chrono Trigger.
Okay.
Wouldn't have to be part of one of these import festivals or anything. It could just come out whenever it likes, I suppose.
Everybody should also get a chance to play Japanese
WiiWare, the Gradius game came out very suddenly.
Very very tepid reviews. Very
yeah,
tepid
apparently he's very, you know, plays it straight down the line in terms of relative to Gradius. There is slow down, and it's not optional like in Mega Man 9.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of things it sounds very much like the Gradius 2 that we have in terms of like the difficulty levels, the infinite continues, the level themes, everything. So yeah,
it sounds to me like it just doesn't really bring anything new that's not already
available
in the
other Gradius
games.
It sounds like it's going to be not much earth jattering at all, but it could be. The one thing it has is like a score mode, and you can upload your scores, you know, online and stuff. But it doesn't sound like that's going to be that useful, as we've talked about with reference to Geometry Wars. It's much more interesting when you have the context with your friends and stuff.
Of course.
And that's not really like that. I mean, that's one great thing about the way Mario Kart does its time attack stuff. Is, you know, if you've got Mario Kart friends, which was easy to add, then you can see them, you know, you can see how you stack up against all your friends at the same time.
I think Mario Kart's the only Wii game that has actual friend leaderboards that I can think of.
Yeah, yeah. And I strongly doubt that that is what's going on in Gradius, so yeah, not that interesting.
Anyway, so I guess that's a good place to wrap up the show. So I want to thank our listeners for putting up with us this episode and helping us to navigate through this weird maze of ideas and stories. Hopefully you've made it to the end of the show.
It was a journey not only through the medium of sound, but of mind.
Indeed, yeah. That was very Twilight Zone-y there.
Yeah, and very cheap innuendo.
Yeah. Endless.
Yeah, so
And sometimes not innuendo, really.
Sometimes you know? Explicit.
Shall we say innuendo covered with the flimsiest of togas?
I think we had a lot of single entendres on this show. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Single entendre?
It was a very winding show.
Mm-hmm. Very crooked, curvy.
All right, stop.
Stop.
Okay, we're done. Send your letters, hate mail, questions, calls for censorship.
Do we have the address of the FCC, or did that not apply?
Actually, the FCC is
luckily we're not using the airwaves.
So that you can go ahead and report anything that offends you.
Oh yeah, actually, if you wanna hear more about Choaniki, oddly enough, I can recommend. There's a video. You can find it in the talkback. I want to say it's episode 109. I mean 99.
It's 99.
Yeah. Go to talkback in our forums on NintendoWorldReport.com. Look for the thread on 99. It should be, you know, not too far down the list. And there's a link towards the end of that thread for a YouTube video that our listener Adolf Vega made. It's pretty funny. It's the audio from from our show about man beams, where we're it's pretty funny stuff. And
good.
Then he's paired it with video of Choaniki gameplay that kind of follows along with the dialogue. So it's pretty funny stuff. It's worth seeing. So yeah, I told him that I would mention that on the show because I think it's pretty interesting. So yeah, you should check that out. I forgot to say the address. So yeah, if you have any mail, comments, questions, complaints, send them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And until next week, we will see you in the forums. So, thanks to Greg, James, John for joining me. And we'll be back next week.
Later.
Go Bears, beat those Jags.
Hi.
So Johnny has completely lost his mind, and just in the nick of time.